We're holding on Munhei Omud Bey's four lines from the bottom. So we were talking about as follows. The Mishnah had said that there were two stands in the Heichel, and the Kohen Gadol would put the bowl with the blood of the parrot on one of them and the bowl with the blood of the sower on the other one, and then having put down the one, then he picks up the other one and continues, because he has, remember, there's the sprinklings that he does of the power in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then there's the sprinklings he does in the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the sower, then he has, then he goes out into the Heichel and picks up the bowl of blood of the power again and sprinkles with it eight times, and then eight more times, Achas Mile of a Shevelamata each time with the blood of the sower. So he keeps on having to set aside one bowl and pick up the other one. So according to the Chachamim in the Mishnah, there were two stands for that purpose. Now, we said, on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and said that there was only one stand, and therefore necessarily he'd have to pick up one bowl before he puts down the other one. So we were discussing why not. Why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, can there not be two stands? So first we were saying that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold that labeling things is a valid way of being able to distinguish them. You might not pay attention to the engravings or labels or wherever they're marked. And therefore, if you have one's labeled par and one's labeled sir, then he might still get them mixed up. Then we said, though, it doesn't seem to be that way, because when it comes to the shofaris, the tzedakah boxes, the pushkas, in the Beis HaMikdash, for various purposes, Rabbi Yehuda does agree that they're labeled. He held that there's no box for kinei choiva for people who are obligated to bring a chatas and a bird as a chatas and a bird as an oila. He held that not. We're trying to figure out why. So actually it's the other way around. First we started saying, why is it that Rabbi Yehuda does not want there to be a box for kinei choiva? First we thought it relates to what we said in our Mishnah, that he doesn't hold that labeling things is a valid way of distinguishing them. You might get them mixed up. We said not so, because the fact is he has the other boxes labeled and he has no problem with that. Then we said the reason is because of the money in that box, you might have some of it that belongs to somebody who died. And then when somebody dies before having brought their chatas, then it's a chatas hamesa. And if they already have the bird, they can't be makir of it. And if they haven't bought the bird yet, they just have the money, then the money would have to be thrown into the Yam HaMelech. The gifts that we had in front of us in the Gemara is v'nishki b'maya, you should throw it in the water. Tosfos Yeshanim points out a different gifts of v'nishki b'nara, you should throw it in the river, in which case it would mean they'd have to grind up the coins first and then throw them into the river so that a boat doesn't get them. Because they're also b'hanara, the point is. Anyway, the point is that, so therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is concerned if somebody who put money in that box died. We're not even saying, first we thought that maybe it's, what if somebody dies, but we said that we usually don't have to be choshish for, but what if we know for a fact that somebody who put money in that box died? Rabbi Yehuda says, now you have chatas hamesa, money mixed in there, therefore you have a problem. Whereas the Chachamim evidently disagree. So the question was, now why don't we take some money out of the box, the equivalent of one korban, throw that in the water, throw that in the Yam HaMelech, or grind it up and throw it in the river, whatever, and the rest of it will be mutter. And the answer is Rabbi Yehuda does not hold of that being valid, because that gets us into a question of Breira, and Rabbi Yehuda does not hold of Breira. Now, by the way, we didn't really discuss yesterday. I mean, the question is, since when is that considered Breira anyway? I mean, what are you going to say about the same logic, for example, that if you have something chafer fell into a mixture of things that are kosher, you're going to say the same thing, we should pick one of them out and assume that that's the one that's also and throw it away and the rest should be mutter? Obviously, we don't say that. Why over here are we even entertaining the possibility and calling it brera? So Tosfos discusses, because there's a difference between something that was also to begin with versus something that was mutter to begin with and only now became also. In this case, this money wasn't also in the first place. It was perfectly good money for a chatas and an oila. Now, the person who gave it, who put it in the box, died, and therefore now we have a problem. It's unlike, for example, when something also falls in, where to begin with, it was something also. Okay. Anyway, so now this is where we're up to. So the Gemara asks, Menolon, where do we know that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold a Breira? Now, so again, Breira is, we're going to be taking four zuzim, or whatever the amount is, Tosfos also points out that four zuzim is not necessarily the amount that that two birds for a korban cost. Might be less than that, actually. Tosfos says just that's the normal thing. When the Gemara wants to talk about a small sum of money, it uses the expression four zuzim, even if it's less than that. Tosfos Hashanim says, on the other hand, we could be talking about a different kind of zuzim, the kind that are called the kesef medina, which are mostly copper and only a little bit of silver. Anyway, the point is, so it would be a question of breda. Because what are we saying? What we want is, are we going to say that the money that we take out now and throw out, retroactively will say all along that was the money that belonged to this person who died? Or are we not going to be able to say that? It's not necessarily the same one, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda is not going to allow it. So where do we see that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees on the concept of Breira? So Manolan, where do we see that from? Ilema Mehal Dichnan, are you going to say that it's based on the following Mishnah, or it's actually, the beginning of it is actually a Mishnah, the continuation of it with the Machloikas is actually a Braisa, as the Tosfos says, really it should say the Tanya. Anyway, the Mishnah or the Braisa says, Halakeach Yain Nidena Kusim, if somebody buys wine from the Kusim, now the Kusim eventually were determined to be Ovid Avodah Zarah, so then there's no question of buying wine from them anyway, because then their wine is Yain Nesach. So we're obviously talking about, Tosfos says, both Rashi and Tosfos say, before there were gozer on them that they're considered like goyim, when you had, throughout all the hundreds of years, when there was a suffix, whether they're gere emes or gere arayas. So according to the opinion, at least, that they're gere emes, nevertheless, or even if we say, even if they were gere arayas, the fact is, even according to that opinion, they do believe in Torah Shabbosav. And they weren't necessarily still worshiping their idols the way they were at the end of the first Beis Hamikdash. Later on, they discovered they were. After all, that's when they declared that they're going Gemurim. But up until that point, even if we said that to begin with their conversion was insincere, there is the possibility that maybe we were allowed to drink their wine. So now you have to buy wine from them. But now you have another problem. The problem is, now, when you buy wine from an Amoretz, then you have the problem that he may not have given Maisa from it. But for one thing, when you buy from an Amoretz, then you have what's called Dmai, but at least you know that he took Truma from it. You know that the Amoretz are careful about Truma. The Kusim, you don't even know if that. The Kusim don't hold that there's a problem with, they have to give Truma and Maisa themselves, of course, from whatever they're eating and drinking, because it says so in Torah Shabbosav, but they don't hold of the concept of Lifnei Iver. They have no problem selling you wine that doesn't have Truma and Meiser taken out from it. They don't hold that there's any Isser involved in that. So therefore, now you have to worry about Truma as well as Meiser. So now the case is you're buying from them. Erev Shabbos im Chasheka. So you're buying it Erev Shabbos right before Shabbos, and you don't have time to take Truma and Meiser. Now in all the other places, this Mishnah or this Braisa is quoted in like 10 places in Shas, because every time the Gemara deals with a matter of Brera, it mentions this Mishnah, or this Braisa, and in all those other places, it doesn't say Erev Shabbos in Chasheicha. And in fact, Rashi doesn't seem to have had that in his gear. So because he says the scenario is, he wants to be able to drink the wine, but he doesn't have kalim available that are tahor to be able to put the Truma and Meiser into. Tosfos says that, yes, it might be talking about Erev Shabbos before Shabbos, but nevertheless, apparently they didn't have that in their gear over here because they had to explain it themselves. Whatever, he buys wine from the Kusim, he wants to be able to right away designate Truma and Meiser, but he can't actually separate out the Truma and Meiser, either because as Rashi says he doesn't have Kalim that are Tahar, or because as Tosfos says it's too close to Shabbos. So if it was Dmai, if he had bought it from an Amoretz, then the din would be, he would be able to separate it out, Bein HaShmoshes. But because we have to be concerned over here, that's Vadai, that it's definitely Tevil, then therefore you're not allowed to, because you're not allowed to take Truma and Meiser on Shabbos, and therefore Midrabanan, and therefore that extends to Bein HaShmoshes as well. Okay, so what does he do? Oymid v'oymer, so he can stand and make the following declaration. Shnei lugim shani osid lahafrish, the two lugim that I will, after Shabbos, separate out from this barrel of wine. Let's say he had bought a barrel that holds 100 lug, so two lug of it, harehin truma, then as of now, they are truma. A soda maiserishin, 10 more are going to be maiserishin, which Tosfos says not necessarily 10 exactly. Once he takes out truma, which is 2%, then maiserishin is really 9.8%. But okay, we're rounding off. In other places, Tosfos says a different explanation, because since we don't know whether the Kusi took Truma from it or not, therefore we have to take full 10 as my submission to be on the safe side. Anyway, so that's that. Tisha Maisa Sheni. Then he takes another 9 from Maisa Sheni. Again, not exactly 9, it's slightly less, but again, we're rounding off over here. Umecho v'shoisa miyad. And then he can mecho and drink right away. Divir of meir. What is mechel? There's 3 different explanations. Rashi says that mechel is the same shodesh, and it means the same as mechalo. Meaning, granted right now before Shabbos, or when he doesn't have kalim that are tahor, he's not able to actually separate out the truma and meiser now before he has to drink, before he starts drinking. What he's going to have to do necessarily is leave over an amount in the barrel, and after Shabbos separate out, or after Shabbos, or when he has kalim to hurt him, separate out the necessary amounts. But meanwhile, at least, so it's one thing as far as the truma, there's no getting around that. The truma is going to have to be given to the Kohen, the Maaser Rishon is going to have to be given to the Levi, there's no way around that. But the Maaser Sheni, at least, let him fix up what he can, he's able to be mechavalet on money, therefore let him do that, and then later on, when he has kalim available, then he can actually separate out the truma and the meiser, and then meanwhile he'll have, as far as the meiser sheni, he'll have the money that he already was mechavalet on, and eventually he'll take that money to Yerushalayim. So that's a coin to Rashi. Tosfos has a number of problems with that explanation. Among others, that he didn't designate where exactly in the barrel the truma and maaser is. I mean, as it is, you know, it's liquid, so it's not like designating a specific place would help much anyway, given that it's going to get mixed around anyhow. But in any case, even when he separated it, he never said, all he said is 10 are going to be 2 are truma, 10 maaser ish, and 9 maaser sheni. He never actually even designated at that moment where the truma and the maaser is. So how is he able to be mechalal it? So Tosfos gives a couple of other explanations. One is that mechel means he can begin immediately to drink. In other words, now that he designated the truma and the meiser, and Tosfos does bring up the possibility that maybe he does need to actually say the tzfoinoi or the droimoi or something like that, say that the truma is on the north side and the meiser ishin is on the south side or something like that. Again, the liquid is all going to get mixed up anyhow, but at least like that, he's designating a specific spot for it, which is more that now it's been designated more specifically. Anyway, Tosfos says maybe yes. On the other hand, it's odd that the Mishnah doesn't mention that point. Be that as it may, anyway, so Tosfos' first explanation of Mechel means that he can begin to drink right away. Another explanation is the word is not Mechal with a Ches, but Mehal with a Hey, which means to mix or to blend. We know throughout Shas that they used to drink their water mixed with wine, because the wine was too strong or too syrupy or whatever it is exactly. So therefore, the idea is now we're saying now that he's made all those designations, now he's allowed to even mix it with water and drink it, even though that's more of a kvius. You could argue that it's one thing if he just drinks, a little bit of it, that's not kvius. That's derech arai. That's a casual way of drinking. And technically you're allowed to do that even before you take truma and maaser from it. But mixing it with water is one of the things that is keveya it. That makes it that now this is a more serious way of drinking, and you're not allowed to do that without truma and maaser. And therefore the Mishnah is telling us that you're even allowed to do that. Anyway, so the mayor says you're allowed to do all that. So here you have the reason why we have such a tiny little omud over here of only 2 lines is because most of it, as you can see, is taken up by Tosfos, the first Tosfos that deals with a lot of the points that we were just talking about the kusim, about what the dinim are buying from kusim versus an amaretz, and about how exactly you have to designate this truma and this mice, and the various meanings of mechal and mehal. Those are what the first Tosfos talks about. And then the last one, Divrei Reb Meir, goes into some detail about what Reb Meir's own shitta is about Breira, that it's not so simple. Here we seem to be saying that Reb Meir accepts the concept of Breira, but there are other Gemaras where it seems to imply that he also doesn't necessarily agree with that. So that gets Tosfos into a long discussion about the ins and outs of when we hold a Breira and when we don't. One of the distinctions is, are we ever going to be able to clarify Are we ever going to be able to pick out a particular thing and say that this is the one? Or is it going to always remain mixed together? Another distinction is over here. You have ultimately he is separating out the 2, the 10, and the 9, whereas you have some cases where you're not going to eventually separate it out. Another distinction Tosfos points out is what's called Tola Bedas Atzma or Tola Bedas Acherim, whether the resolution of the Breira is going to depend on something that he himself plans to do versus something that somebody else plans to do, as we're going to have an example on Amud Beis. Getting back to the Gemara, so the mayor says then that you're allowed to do this. You're allowed to pre-designate that you're going to give 2, 10, and 9, and then you can drink the rest of the wine on Shabbos or when you don't have Kalim, as the case may be, and then later on you'll actually separate them out. But Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Oisrim. But Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon all say that it's also Alma ain Breira. So that goes to show, according to Rabbi Yehuda, apparently there's no such thing as Breira. Because that's why, according to him, it sounds like you need to designate the truma and the maaser first before you start drinking. So therefore, so that would explain then the same thing. So now, when it comes to the boxes in the Beis Mikdash, the shofaris, Rabbi Yehuda does not want there to be one for kinei chova, where for karbonis that a person is required to bring, because one of them is a chatas, and then you might have money that's chatas from maaser ba'alel mixed in over there, and according to him, you can't say brevity, you can't say you're going to take some of the money and throw it out and the rest should be motor. However, the Gemara says, Mimai, who says that that's the correct explanation of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? Dilma Shiny Hossam, maybe there's a different reason why Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon all say it's also in the case of the wine from the Kusim. Kitkatani Taima, as in fact, the Braisa continues with a reason, a different reason, not brevity. Amru loyla Rab Meir, namely that those three chachamim say to Rab Meir, I ata moda shemi yibaka hanoid, don't you agree, don't you have to admit that there's a possibility that between when you designated the truma and meiser, the skin bag, which is what they kept wine in those days, so we're not talking about a barrel necessarily, we're talking about a leather bag that they kept wine in, the bag might split open and the wine is going to spill, v'nimtza shosa tevolim l'mafreya, and then it's going to come out retroactively that he drank tevel. Because what's the, even according to you, Reb Meir, you need to eventually take the 2 and the 10 and the 9 and do the respective things with them. Okay, the 9, according to Rashi, you were already mechalal, so you don't need to do anything with it. Fine. But the 2 for the Kohen, the Truma, and the 10 for the Levi, that you still have to give them. So, and if you don't, if the wine ends up spilling before you had a chance to give it to them, then it comes out that everything you drank up until that point was tevel, because it turns out that Truma and Maisa was never separated for it. So don't you have to agree that that's a problem? And Rav Meir answers them, if it breaks, if it bursts open, then we'll worry about it. In other words, we're not worried about it because, as Rashi says, you can give it to a shomer. The shomer can notice if it's starting to swell up and it looks like it's about to burst and take steps to prevent that. So therefore, we're not worried that it's going to, he can prevent that from happening. Anyway, so we see from that end of the Braisa, about the part where they said to him and what he said to them, that the problem appointed of Yehuda is not Breira. The problem is that you might not ever have that the Truma and Meiser actually get separated out and given to the people that it's supposed to be given to. Or at least, even if you don't need to give it to them in order to be able to drink the wine, at least it has to be separated out. Or a mayor is saying is you can separate it out later. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying, but you might not ever have a chance to separate it out because it may spill. Rabbi Meir says, I'm not worried about that. But we do see, in other words, that's Rabbi Yehuda's reason, because you may not ever separate it out. Maybe if that weren't a problem, Rabbi Yehuda would be fine with Breira. Which now Tosfos says what it is, in other words, so what was the Havamina then? If we know the end of the Braisa that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon are saying that the problem is that Shemi Yibaka Hanoid, that it might burst open, then why is the Gemara even entertaining the possibility that they're doing it because of Breira? And the answer is Tosfos says because they might be saying, according to your own Svara, they would be saying to a mayor like this, we hold that you can't do Breira. Therefore, according to us, even if there's no possibility of Yibaka Hanoid, then you still have a problem because you haven't actually separated out the Truma and Maisu yet. But even according to you, fine, you don't have a problem. You accept Breira, but don't you have a problem of Shibaka Anoid? And he says, no, that I'm not worried about either. So there's two reasons he would say why I disagree with you. Number one, you're concerned that Breda doesn't work, and I say it does work. And number two, you say, Shemi Yibaka Anoid, and I say that's not a problem. Okay. Anyway, so there's no solid proof from there that Rabbi Yehuda and his Chaverim hold of there being a problem with Breda at all. Maybe they agree that Breira is fine, and they're only disagreeing in that particular case because you're Baka Hanoid. Okay. Ela Midatani Ayin. Rather, we can say, we can prove that Rabbi Yehuda does not agree with Breira on the basis of something that Ayin said. That Ayin was the name of a Chacham who taught a Braisa as follows. Midatani Ayin. Now, you have like this. The Mishnah in Eruvin, we learned it several months ago. About a year ago, I guess. That talks about a case where a person is not sure on Shabbos which direction he's going to be able to walk more beyond 2,000 amos outside of the city. So, for example, you have a case where a chacham is going to be coming to town and he wants to be able to put down an eruv on a tnai depending which direction the chacham comes to. Then I want to be able to walk in that direction in order to be able to hear his drasha. And what happens, you have a similar case where the Mishnah talks about what happens if you have two Chachamim that are coming. You have one is going to be coming to the east side of town, and the other one is saying is going to be coming to the west side of town. And so a person might put down two Eruv Chumim before Shabbos on a Tanai and say, tomorrow I'll decide at the time which one's Drasha I want to listen to more, and then that Eruv will become effective. Now it won't become effective in the middle of Shabbos, and Erev only becomes effective Bein HaShemoshes. So this is an example of Breira. Or are we going to say that he can decide on Shabbos itself that retroactively to the beginning of Shabbos, that is the direction I wanted to go to? So Rabbi Yehuda says, a person cannot make a tnai on two things at once. He can make a tnai that if the chacham comes towards the mizrach, then he wants to go to the mizrach. And if the chacham is coming to the west, then he wants his eruv in the west to be valid. But he can't make in two different directions and make a tnai on it and say that on Shabbos itself, I want to be able to decide depending which chacham I want to go and listen to. So now in Eruvin we discuss that my shna lekan lekan deloy. Why is Rabbi Yehuda saying that you can't do in both directions and then make a tnai between them? And the reason is evidently the ein breira. The reason must be because you can't have breira. You can't say that now on Shabbos afternoon when he wants to go to one of them, then retroactively we can say that his choice was valid as of the beginning of Shabbos. Well, a miserable might of Nami Ein Breira. Shouldn't you say the same thing as far as when there's one Chacham, and you don't know whether he's going to come to the east or the west? On the face of it, in other words, we're talking about that there's one Chacham. Right now he's at a point, let's say, north of the city. We know that, he's in such a way that he's able to travel in a diagonal towards the east or towards the west of the city. Either way, either one is within his Tchum Shabbos. We assume that the Chacham himself has not decided yet at the beginning of Shabbos which direction he plans to travel, whether he plans to come towards the east or towards the west. So in that case, then why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, would that one be good? L'mizrach amayr of Nami ain't Breira. Don't you have the same problem of Breira? Bein HaShemoshes, the Chacham hadn't yet decided which direction he plans to come. So now, sometime on Shabbos, the Chacham decided that he's going to go towards the east. Then Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that your Eruv now retroactively takes effect in that direction. How can that be? If Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a Breira, then it wouldn't work in that case either. And the answer is, V'om Rabbi Yechanan kishakvar b'chacham. The answer is, Rabbi Yechanan says, you're right. What we mean is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're not talking about that Bein HaShemoshes, the Chacham hasn't yet decided which direction he's going to go in. It actually means that Bein HaShemoshes, the Chacham, already went in that direction. So now, fine, the person himself doesn't yet know, come Bein HaShemoshes of Shabbos, which direction the Chacham actually ended up coming. But nevertheless, it was already determined. The Chacham already went in one direction or another. Therefore, it's kind of like a gilui milsa ba'alma. We're just waiting to actually find out the facts, which direction did he go in. And then at that point, we can say that when he finds out on Shabbos, then that's retroactive to the beginning of Shabbos. There's no brera involved. But we see from that discussion that Rabbi Yehuda does hold that Breira is no good, and therefore, therefore again, when you have one Chacham, he has to have decided before Shabbos which direction he's going, and only then is the person in town, only then is his Eruv going to be valid. And in the case where there are two Chachamim, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say no good, because then you yourself are the one who's trying to decide on Shabbos which one you would rather go and listen, and on Shabbos now you can't decide retroactive to the beginning of Shabbos. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold a brera. Again, you have, again, Tosfos does get into a discussion over here about the difference in this regard, again, between being Tola Badas Asma and Tola Badas Acherim. Over here, it depends on the Chacham's decision, whereas you have other cases of Breira, such as the one with Halakeach Yayin Ben Akosim, where it depends on his own actions. So that's another factor to consider as well. There is, by the way, a discussion among Rishonim. We know that you're able to, what's the difference between Breira and a Tnai, they ask. You have, in many cases, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees you're allowed to make a t'nai on something. You can, for example, you can be Makadish a woman al t'nai, you can be Megarish al t'nai, you can do all kinds of different things, you can sell somebody something al t'nai, and Rabbi Yehuda never has a problem with that. So why would we say that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Breira is no good, but a t'nai would be fine? So there's a few different answers. One possibility is, again, that one possibility, I think, that Ramban brings up is that a t'nai is specifically if there's two alternatives, yes or no, as opposed to breira is where there's more than two alternatives. In the case, for example, of the Chacham over here, he could come to the east, he could come to the west, or he could just decide to stay put and not come to either direction. So you have three possibilities, so then already it's breira. Tosfos discusses over here another possibility, because it's not in his ability to make it happen one way or the other, he can't make Chacham come in one direction versus the other, whereas a regular t'nai involves something that that one or the other party of the agreement is able to do. It's in their hands to do. And in fact, when you have a t'nai that depends on something which is beyond the capabilities of either one of them, sometimes, in fact, we don't call it a t'nai at all. We call it an asmachta, and that's a whole other matter. An asmachta is not valid b'halacha. Anyway, the point is now getting back to the Gemara. So we've established, therefore, that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold a breira. So that explains, now, when it comes to the cases of the shofaris and the Beis Mikdash, that is why Rabbi Yehuda does not want there to be a box for Kinei Chayva, not because he's concerned that you might not pay attention to the labels, but because you might have money in there that's supposed to be for a chafas shemesu ba'olah. And then that money would have to be destroyed. And since he holds that there's no breira, then we say he can't just take out some of the money and throw it away and use the rest of the money. Okay. So now the Gemara says, "B'hashta d'amrin l'Rabbi Yehuda ein breira." Okay, so now that we've established, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that breira is not valid. And by the way, one more thing we should mention on this matter of breira, there is a further argument in some Gemaras and in Rishonim on them, if we say that there's no breira, does that apply to things d'araisa and d'rabbanon, or maybe does it apply only to things d'araisa? Maybe with things d'rabbanon we would say breira. That is how the halacha is accepted, that when it comes to things d'rabbanon, we can use breira. When it comes to things d'araisa, we cannot. So which means, in other words, therefore, so in the case of the chatois ha-mesis, that's something d'araisa, so therefore we can't use breira. In the case of the truma and meiser from the wine, it depends actually whether truma and meiser nowadays are d'araisa or d'rabbanon. In various places, the Gemara discusses that question, whether even in Eretz Yisrael nowadays truma is d'rabbanon, and that might be a valid reason to use breira in those cases. And in the case of the Eruv is d'rabbanon, so therefore you would be able to make a t'nai like that. Anyway, So v'hashtadam minim l'Rabbi Yehuda ein breira. So now we're saying ultimately, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no, he doesn't accept breira as a valid way. Hok siva islay, but Rabbi Yehuda has no problem with labeling things and saying that we're going to tell them apart based on the labels because we said that he allows that all the boxes in the Bais Mikdash, all the shofars, were labeled, and he's not concerned that money from one of them might be used for a different purpose. So then we have to go back to the question. So according to him, why don't we make two stands in the Hekel for Yom Kippur and write on one of them, pound on the other, one, sir, and the Kohen Gadol will do it that way, and that way he'll put down the one bowl and then pick up the other one, which would be better because that way each time he's able to pick it up in his right hand, which is the preferable way of doing it, since Avodah is supposed to be done with the right hand. So why don't we do that? Originally, at the beginning of the sugya, we thought that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold that labels are a valid way of distinguishing. And we said that could explain the thing with the kinim. But then we said that not. So now that we've established that Rabbi Yehuda's problem by the kinim is breira, not ksiva, so by Yom Kippur, there's no issue of breira. So there's only the issue of ksiva. So why, according to him, don't you have two stands? The answer is, Mishum Chosha, the Kohen Gadol, Lava Daite. The answer is because the Kohen Gadol is weak. He's been fasting all day. We said in the first parak of Armasechta, he's had to stay up all night. So therefore, he might be so weak that the Lava Daite, he may not notice, he may not pay close attention to the inscriptions. And therefore, he might take the wrong bowl. And in fact, the Gemara says, you have to say that way. After all, if you don't say that way, why should you even need labels? Even if you don't have them labeled par and sir, if he wasn't feeling so weak, he ought to be able to easily tell which is which. Because high nafish v'high zutter. After all, the bowl with the blood of the par has much more blood in it than the blood of the sir. A par is a physically larger animal, so therefore it's going to have much more blood. So you might answer that's not definitive because what happens if he's not makabel all the blood? No. Well, Amar Rav Yehuda, didn't Rav Yehuda, this is the Rav Yehuda, the Amora, by the way, of course, he says, Hashoychet Tzorech Sheikabel Es Kol Domo Shopar, when the person shechts, and when he's makabel, rather, he has to be makabel all the blood of the par or of any other korban. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Es Kol Dama Por Yishpoch El Yisoid HaMizbeach, or Yisoid Mizbach HaOyla, all of the blood of the par should pour onto the yisod of the mizbeach. Now, it doesn't mean, in other words, he's not pouring all the blood because obviously some of it was already used for sprinkling or dashing or whatever against the sides of the mizbeach. So what we mean is, as we learned earlier, that it's one of those things. Given that the kol is not really referring to the pouring out, it must refer to the original kabbalah of the blood that he has to receive all the blood, all the dama nefesh. So the blood of the par is going to be much more than the blood of the sir. V'chitema domo mishtikif minei. So you're going to say, okay, but still some of the blood of the par might spill before he has a chance to do it. So then you might have the level in both mizrakis, in both basins, might be the same. Nevertheless, there's a different way you could tell. Hai chiver v'hai summa. The one from the goat is paler. It's not as deep a red color. And the one from the par is a much deeper red color. Rashi points out, we had in the previous perek, we said that there were various grades of gold, one of them being red gold, which resembled dam haparim, because in other words, it was a deep red, like the blood of a par. The blood of a sir, meanwhile, is not quite as deep a red. It's a little bit of a paler shade. So you should be able to tell that way. Ella, obviously the answer is, Mishum Chosha to Kohen Gadol Lava Daite, Rabbi Yehuda would take the view that because the Kohen Gadol was weak and fasting and was up all night, he might not pay attention to that level of detail. Hachanami, the same thing you could say as far as inscriptions on the stands, Mishum Chosha to Kohen Gadol Lava Daite, the same thing, he might be weak and he might not notice. Which means, in effect, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that even though you have three different ways of telling, even if you have an inscription, and you have that one bowl is fuller than the other, and you have that the blood in one is darker than the other, nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda says you might confuse one for the other. And therefore, he says that's why you should have only one stand. So it's not that in general he doesn't hold of ksiva as being valid, but he says in this particular case, since the Kohen Gadol is weak, then he might not notice the inscriptions, and he might not notice these other details as well.
How about the helper that we have?
That's
the helper.
Yeah. You have to speak a little bit closer to the phone. I can barely hear you. What? You're gonna have to ask later, I guess. I can barely hear you. I'm sorry.
He's not there helping him and reminding him.
Ellie, you know what? Ask later, actually, because I can barely hear you. You have to be closer to the phone if you're gonna be able to. If you're gonna ask a question, because otherwise I'm not hearing you. I'm sorry. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Ahudin Nachis Kamei Rava." One time, a chazan was davening by the Amud in front of Rava in Rava's yeshiva, and he was saying a Seder Havoda like we do nowadays, listing, describing blow by blow what the Kohen Gadol does on Yom Kippur. Omar, so he said, he quoted our Mishnah and said, "Yotzev he nichra kan sheni shebehechol." The Kohen Gadol went out and put the basin on the second stand in the Hechel, and then notel dama porvi niach dama sir. Then he picked up the blood of the par and put down the blood of the sir. Omale, so Rava says, your nusach is contradicting itself. Chodek Rabbanan v'chodek Rav Yehuda. You're doing one part of your nusach is like the Rabbanan, that there were two stands, and the second part like Rav Yehuda, that he had to pick up the one bowl before he put down the other one. Now, what it was is this chazan misunderstood. Our Mishnah uses the expression like this. The Mishnah had said that he put the blood of the par on the second can in the heichel. he put it on the second can in the heichel. Then the Mishnah had said, Rav Yehuda had said there's only one can. Then the Mishnah had continued, Noto dama parvi niach dama sir. So this chazan misunderstood and thought that line, not adama parvi, niach dama sir, is going back now according to both the Chachamim and Rabbi Huda. So now Rava is explaining to him that no, that line, not adama parvi, niach dama sir, is actually also according to Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda's complete statement is, loy hayashama lakan echad bovad, there was only one stand over there, and on that stand, and because there was only one stand, not adama parvi, necessarily, you have to pick up the blood of the par and then put down the blood of the sir. That's all part of what Rabbi Huda is saying. Therefore, he says to him instead, Ema, what you should say is, all according to the Chachamim, there were two stands, and then say, he niach dama sir, v'notel dama per, he put down the blood of the sir, and he picked up the blood of the par, because according to the Chachamim, since there were two stands, then he's able to do that. He doesn't have to pick up one before he puts down the other. And it's better this way, according to the Chachamim, because this way he can pick it up with his right hand. And that's how we do it in the Seder Havodah nowadays as well. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, V'hizah mimenu ala pareches keneged oren mibachutz. Then he picks up the blood of the par, and he sprinkles from it on the pareches, in front of the Oren, on the outside, meaning he stands directly, he stands outside the Parochas, now he's out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's standing in front of the Parochas, facing towards where the Oren is inside, and he's sprinkling on the Parochas in front of him, directly in front, or on the Parochas, or we're going to see tomorrow, Bez Hashem, whether, does it mean that he has to be in front of the Parochas, or does it mean that the blood actually has to touch the Parochas? We'll get into that tomorrow, Bez Hashem. But the point is, he's standing directly in front of where the Oren is behind the Parochas. And of course, in the second Bez Mikdash, no Oren, then it means he's still standing in the same place in front of where the Oren would have been. Anyway, so, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. When the Pasuk says, V'chein yaseh la'oyho moyed, the Pasuk says that so should he do to oil for the oil moed, meaning in the heichel. So that means ma tamad loyma. So what is that pasuk adding? In particular, what is the word yasa adding? It means kashem shemazal lefnai lefnim kach mazal beheichel. The same kind of hazois that he does it lefnai velefnim in the kodesh hakodashim. The same kind he does in the heichel. Therefore, ma lefnai lefnim achas l'mayla v'shev l'mata, just like in the Kodesh HaKadoshim we said he had sprinkled the blood of the par one up and seven down, midama par, from the blood of the par, kach maza behechel, the same way he does achas l'mayla v'shev l'mata, with the par in the hechel, in front of the parochas. And the same way as in the Kurdish HaKadoshim, he had done one up and seven down with the blood of the sir, the same way in the hechel, So altogether, so far, once he's done with that, he's had 32 sprinklings. 8 with the power in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, 8 with the Seir in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, 8 with the power in the Heichal, 8 with the Seir in the Heichal. And when the Pasuk continues, that same Pasuk continues, it says, which the Oyo Moed and the Shechina that's in it rests with them, rests among them in the midst of their Tumah. That means, even when the Jewish people are Tumah, the Shechina is still with them. So in this connection, the Gemara says, a certain min said to Rab Chanina, he says, Hashta bori tmeyun atun, now definitely you are tame, and the Shechina is not resting among you, because after all you're tame. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, tum also b'shuleha. A Pasuk in Eicha that says, Hutuma is on the hems of her clothing, in other words, it's clearly visible. So therefore you're tame, so there's no Shechina among you. And in particular, so first of all, it meant that Tzduki, the min wants, therefore, that now, so give up your Yiddishkeit, you don't have Hashem with you anyway, come join our religion, whatever it is. The Iyun Yaakov also points out that he's saying, you know what, once you're Tomei with some Avedis, you might as well continue to do other Avedis, you have nothing to gain by staying away from them. Anyway, that was his argument. Amalei, so Rav Chanina tells him, no, tochazi maksibu, come see what it says about the Jewish people. Hashtoichen itam b'soich tumoisam, we just said, Hashem's Shechina rests among the Jewish people in the midst of their tumah, meaning exactly that. Afilu b'zman shein tmein, even at a time when the Jewish people are tumah, Shechina shruya b'nein, the Shechina is still resting among them. Marsha explains what Rav Chanina was saying to this min was as follows. You're quoting the Pasuk Tum Asa B'Shuleha to say that the Jewish people are like a nidya. As if like her tumah is clearly visible on the hems of her garment, the blood stains over there. But Rav Chanina tells him, then you're forgetting the fact, listen, when a woman is nidya, doesn't mean that her husband permanently separates from her. It just means right now they're not able to be close with each other, but they're still living in the same house. They're able to be in yichud together even. So the same way, even if we're tumah like a nidya, it doesn't mean that Hashem rejected us completely like you're thinking. It's just right now we're like a nidya, but eventually we become tahor again. And even while we're tumah, Hashem is still living together with us and still is our husband. Okay. So the Gemara asks, now we just said that since the Pasuk says V'chein Yasal Oyo Moed, then that means exactly as is done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the exact same thing is done in the Heichal. Now, the problem with that is as follows. In the Gemara before, on Daf Nun Hei, which we learned on Shabbos, we talked about how we know that there's Achas L'mayla V'Sheva L'mata by both the Par and the Sur. Now, by the Par, it says clearly Sheva L'mata, but it doesn't explicitly say how many there are L'mayla. And by the Sur, it's the other way around. It says more explicitly how many there are L'mayla, because it says Oisai, which means it, which means one sprinkling. It doesn't clearly say how many there are L'mata. And we have to learn it from the power. So ultimately, what we do is we said in the Gemara over there, we make a hekesh to learn the power from the sur and the sur from the power. Now, when it comes to kola torah kula, that wouldn't, when it comes to most areas in torah, that wouldn't be a problem. You can learn a din with a hekesh from one place to another, and then you can take that din in turn and use it as a basis for another hekesh or another kavachomer or another zeta shava or what have you. But when it comes to kodshim, uniquely, we have a rule that when we have something that we learned by a hekesh, we can't then learn something from it by another hekesh. So isn't that what we're doing over here? So you want to ask the chidavah halamed behekesh chozer malamed behekesh? How could something that we learn from a hekesh in turn teach to something else by a hekesh? Here you're saying that we learn the number of sprinklings of the sur and the number of sprinklings of the power in the Kodesh HaKadoshim by a hekesh. How are we now able to take that hekesh and apply it to the heichal? The answer is, hai hemenu v'dava achavi. The answer is that it's not a complete hekesh the first time around, because hemenu, you're learning something from what it says by itself, as well as v'dava achar, as well as you're learning a detail of it from something else. Namely, Rashi explains, both by the par and by the sur, it does say that you need sprinklings l'mayla and sprinklings l'mata. So we didn't need to learn that from each other. All we needed to learn, one from the other, is the number of them. So therefore, with each one of them, with the power, we know that there's Lamaila and we know that there's Lamata. All we needed to do is know how many there are Lamaila, and we learned that from the Hekesh with the Sir. And the same thing with the Sir. We know that there is Lamata. We just didn't know how many. We had to learn it by a Hekesh with the power. So that's fine. Heimenu v'davar acher is not really considered to be lamed the hekesh. Therefore, it's something that we can now take and use as a basis for another hekesh. So Rashi explains, if we said, if let's say by the soda it didn't say lamata at all, or if by the pirate it didn't say lamaila at all, and we needed to learn it by a hekesh, then we would say you can't learn from that to something else via a hekesh. But here, where it does say lamaila and lamata by both of them, it just doesn't say the number, then that's heimenu v'davar acher. So therefore, that's not considered a hekesh. Gemara says it's not so simple. That works out according to the opinion in Zvachim and the whole sugya on this. That indeed, that is not considered a hekesh. El olamanda omer have hekesh, but you have another opinion over there at the end of Rashi refers to the Gemara at the end of Perik Ezu Makoyman that discusses this point whether such a thing heimenu v'davar acher is considered a hekesh or not. The context over there is about the Korban Pesach. About certain dinim that we learn about how the blood is to be applied to the Mizeach. Anyway, so according to the opinion that even Heimenu v'davar acher is a hekesh, that even though, yes, some of it says by itself, it says Lamaila and Lamata by both of them, all we need to learn is the number. According to that opinion, that still is enough for it to be considered a hekesh. Well, then, my ikalamema, then what are you going to say? Then you have something that you're learning from a hekesh, and now you're trying to learn from a hekesh from it to the heichel, and how can we do that? The answer is, Mekomasu de Gamri Mehadodin. The answer is, because what we're learning over here is the different places. Because a Lomid bin a Hekesh would be if we learn something by a Hekesh, and then we want to apply the exact same thing to something else. Here we're not doing that. Here what it is, the first time around, in other words, the Hekesh was between the two different animals, between the Par and the Sir, that just like the number seven, just like seven lamata by the par, so seven lamata by the sir. And just like one lamaila by the sir, so one lamaila by the par. So we were learning one animal from the other animal. Here, we're not learning anything about the animals. We're learning over here about the places, the same way as in the Chodesh HaKadoshim, the same way as in the Heichel. So therefore, it's not Dovra Lamed Behekesh, Chozor Lamed Behekesh, because it's two different things. First, we're learning one animal from the other, and then we're learning one place from the other. So therefore, that's not a problem. And another answer, Iborisem, Chutz Mirifnim, V'chodazim Nagamar, another answer, you could say, we're learning the outside from the inside all at once. In other words, even if we said that we learn what's going on inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim by a Hekesh, but what we're doing is we're taking as a unit, we're taking the Achas Lamaila by the Sir and the Sheva Lamata by the Par together with whatever was learned by a Hekesh and applying it all to the Heichel. Meaning, Rashi says, we're learning the seven lamata of the sir from a hekesh, and we're learning the one lamaila of the par from a hekesh. So if we were to say that we're doing in the heichel, we're doing only seven lamata with the sir and only one lamaila with the par, then that would be we were taking something that we learned by a hekesh and applying it to something else by a hekesh, and we can't do that. But over here, we're not just learning those. We're learning the entire thing together. We're transferring it as a unit, what we learned by a hekesh and what we didn't learn by a hekesh. So therefore, even according to that opinion, therefore, that would be valid. And you can do that. And therefore, ultimately, we're able to learn what we do in the heichel from the Kodesh HaKadoshim through a hekesh. And it's not considered a hekesh from another hekesh. Tosfos goes into a bit more discussion about it, and explains, among other things, is that another possibility they bring from the Ri is that when we say Achas Lamaila by the Sir, then we're learning that both the Par and the Sir need Achas Lamaila. And from the seven Lamata of the Par, we're learning outside in the Heichel, both the Par and the Sir need Sheva Lamata. So therefore, it's not a hekesh from a hekesh, because the one up by the sir and the seven down by the par, it says explicitly, All we're doing is we're saying that from that we're learning to not only the sir, but also the par, and not only the par, but also the sir, and we're learning them in the Kurdish as well. So that's another way of doing it, where we're not resorting to a hekesh on top of a hekesh. And then Tosfos goes to ask some questions about that, and therefore Tosfos says that it prefers Rashi's explanation. So the bottom line is Tosfos says really all these explanations are not really all that far apart. These various explanations of what the Gemara means with this last answer almost amount to the same thing, that we're not learning something from a hekesh and then learning from that using another hekesh. We're learning something that was not via a hekesh, and we're applying it via a hekesh, and that's fine. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, with more discussion about these squigglings of blood that he does in the Heichel. And then we'll continue from there with the continuation of the Avodah of Yom Kippur.
On the matter of the Shechina leaving the Jewish people when they're Betuma, why was he inferring that when we know that Hashem said we have a bris olam with the Ebishter? It's never going to...
The minim in particular are the early Christians. They had the notion that this bris is not la'olam, that eventually Hashem rejected the Jewish people and chose them instead. So this idea that he was trying to bring to Rav Chanina may have been of a piece with that, and Rav Chanina is explaining to him that he's completely wrong. But the point is he was thinking that a bris olam means only as long as you behave yourself, but not when you don't. And Chanina is pointing out to him that on one level maybe before we were like a husband and wife who, as we said the other day in the Gemara, are able to be in close physical contact with each other. Now we don't have that, but nevertheless, don't think that Hashem rejected us. Now we're just like a woman who's nida and is temporarily off limits to her husband.
And the proof is in the pudding, because if there was no Shina, he could have just annihilated us in one stroke.
This is also true.
And he did. And
ultimately, we don't have to sit here justifying this min's theology. You know, the Gemara is just bringing in this one particular detail where we see that we can disprove their theology based on this one thing. But yeah.
Okay.
And obviously, I mean, there's no question, you know, there's different levels of Ashras HaShchina anyhow. I mean, to a certain extent, for example, you know, the Navi Yechezkel does see in his Nevuah where he sees the Shechina leaving the Beis HaMikdash in stages. So there's definitely a certain level of Shechina did leave. We said at the end of the first Perek that there was a higher level, that in the second Beis HaMikdash there wasn't the Shechina to the extent that there was in the first Beis HaMikdash. Or Rav Chanina is saying is don't think that it's completely gone. There's still some vestige of it. The Shechina is still with us in some way, even when we're Tamei. But obviously, right, a higher level of it, like we're saying, to be intimate with Hashem, to be intimate with the Shechina, that we don't have nowadays until the Beis HaMikdash is built.
But still in Veeam, clearly it mentions the fact that the Shechina will return, and it's going to be at a higher level.
That too. I mean, this min might have claimed that it means that it'll return to his people now because they're the real Jews, you know. As you know, the Christians have always had that notion. But whatever, you know, that's their Krumah ideas. I don't think we need to get too far into that.
Rabbi,
that you wanted to ask before, maybe get closer to the phone and ask. And
yeah, then, could you hear me now? Could you hear me now?
Yeah, now I can hear you much better.
Yeah. So this Gan Koyen that was next to or started the Kohen Gadol, he couldn't remind him, and you listen, puts closer to that.
We said before that Kol Adam Lo Yia Ba'Oyel Moed, nobody else is allowed to be in the entire Heichel while the Kohen Gadol was doing the Avodah in the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So no, there's no Sagan there, there's no nobody there. The Kohen Gadol himself has to remember which is which. And Rabbi Hoda is concerned that because he's not feeling so well, because he's fasting and then sleep deprived, that he might not notice. Yeah, no, makes things a lot easier, but Gzeres HaKosov, that only the Kohen Gadol is to be there. In fact, we learned earlier when it says, B'chol Adam La'yia Ba'oyo Moed, Tosfos Yeshanim quoted from the Yerushalmi that even Malachim are not allowed to be in there at that time.
Right. I remember you mentioned, I thought that the Sgan Kohen was able to be there, not in the Kohen Gadol, but in the Oyo Moed, he was allowed to be there, I guess not. Okay.
No. So we said that while the Kohen Gadol was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, nobody's allowed to be in the entire Heichel. And also, while he's doing the sprinklings of blood in the Heichel, nobody's allowed to be anywhere in the Heichel. They're allowed to be Beina Ulam Balam Mizdeach. They're allowed to be in the area between the Ulam, between the front entryway of the Heichel and the Mizdeach. So, yeah, I suppose conceivably they could peek in and tell him, but the Pashtus, they're not going to do that. The Pashtus, they, you know, it's meant to be the Yisroel Malka B'Chodoy, the Kohen Gadol representing the Jewish people, and Hashem alone, so they're not going to be peeking in and telling him what to do and what not to do. So he has to remember himself.
From the moment that he left the Zgan Kohen Gadol, when he shechted, and for that time, he could have forgotten and mixed up the sire and the par.
Well, we're saying right now, when he's in the Heichel, when he goes, so he comes in with the second bowl of blood. Fine. At that point, there's nothing to be confused about because now he's doing the sir. But now, when we come to the first time where he needs to put one of them down and pick up the other one, so now the question is, Rabbi Huda is concerned that if there are two stands over there, even though, again, even though each one is labeled, and even though the amount of blood in each bowl is different, and even though there are different shades of red, nevertheless, he may get them mixed up, and he may, for example, so now, having put down the blood of the sir, he's supposed to be picking up the blood of the par and doing the next set of sprinklings with it, he may mistakenly pick up the blood of the sir instead and do it with those.
Uh-huh. All right. So that's why they only had one stand according to Rabbi Huda.
So that's why, according to the Yoda, there's only one stand. That forces him, therefore, to pick up the one before he puts down the other, and that way there's less chance that he's going to mix them up.
Okay. Shkoyach.
Yeah, everyone.